There's so much that you just don't see, but if
welcome everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You are listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on Civic Media. You can always join us. It is Talk Back Thursday, which means we can talk about anything you want to. What's the thing that made you talk back at your radio or TV this week? Because I've got, like, it's all over the place for me, Evan. I've got some stuff from pop culture. I could rip three segments on the Cubs-Brewers series easily.
Cubs suck.
Oh, terrible. And I was at that game last night.
Really?
Oh, just, it's like a death by a thousand tiny, tiny paper cuts.
So you did not have more fun than you're allowed then.
I certainly did not.
That's a directive if you're going to go to a game, you know?
Well, it was funny. There was just extraordinary police presence at the ball field. And I know a couple of cops, and I ran into them, and I'm like, is this because it's a Cubs game? And basically, yes. Here, I thought it would be the day after the big holiday and things would be quiet. Apparently not.
They're rowdy?
But yeah. What? Go ahead. Sorry.
They're rowdy? That's it?
I guess fights tend to break out quite a bit.
Yeah, the rivalry.
It's a night game. So, you know, the I-94 rivalry, I just don't get it. Yeah. I sat next to, like, the nicest Cubs fan, too. Anyways, great, great game, but what a heartbreaker. It was hard to get up this morning. And then the day just popped off. So much going on here that's going to be so crucially important for the state. The city of Milwaukee, I don't know if you know this, Evan, will be taking its vote on whether or not to put the sales tax in on Monday, like this coming Monday.
I did not know it was Monday. I knew it was happening, but oh, man.
Yeah, lickety split right here. You know what I'm saying?
Some folks aren't too happy about it either. We had that debate, I don't know, it was a week or two ago. We had some of our regular listeners call in.
Yes,
they were quite perturbed. I don't know.
Well, I'm just super curious to see how that's all going to shake out. So much at stake for the city, and so much of I think what people were taking umbrage to is already baked into the cake. It's in the bill. It's law anyway. So, you know, do you go ahead and cash the check? So that's happening on Monday. That's also when the county is having its first major hearing on the county sales tax. So the county analogy all happening at the same time. It's like my head was going to explode all day. But that doesn't mean I don't have some thoughts for y'all this evening. But again, Thursdays can be your show. If there is something that you want to talk about and get up off your chest, apparently we've had some listener complaints because I think bigots and racists are bad. Common sense sorts of themes here.
Yes.
Say again.
The impression that I got, you know, you had really riled somebody up. They didn't. I wish they had stuck around. I mean, I'll make that clear now. Please stick around.
Call back 844-967-2789.
I'll lightly screen you and just, you know, maybe you don't get on at that second. But we want to hear what you have to say. I was so, so curious. She made it very, very clear. She was upset. You had riled her up.
Interesting. I always want to hear what, especially when people are really agitated about something. Because if it's getting under your skin that much, like, I want to hear about it. Like, is there something that I'm missing? What is your perspective? Can we set aside the stuff that's making us really angry about the rhetoric and actually talk about the thing? Because that's been my experience, and I don't know for the listeners out there and you, Evan, it seems to me that we often just get off on the wrong foot, right? Like, we hear the thing that triggers us, and then we can't return to the conversation about the substance because we're so mad about how we're being talked at.
Almost always, too. You're exactly right. You're exactly right. It's why you can sit down at the bar and find that you have a lot in common with this person, you know, that you're diametrically opposed to when you're on Twitter.
Yeah, it was. So I actually had that experience last night. I had to stop for a cocktail on my way home after the game to, like, drown my sorrows with yet another heartbreaker. And I sat down next to this guy, and he sort of vaguely recalled me or knew me. And he said, oh, yeah, aren't you this lawyer, blah, blah, blah. And so we started talking. He's like, yeah, I disagree with everything you pretty much say ever. And I was like, really? I was like, well, tell me what's important to you, right? And this directly relates to what our guest yesterday, Erica Payne from Patriotic Millionaires, was talking about. It's like, what matters to you? And I would argue that most people would say some combination of the following things. Like, you want to feel that you have fair representation in government, that government is generally working and not stealing from you. You want to feel like you can go to work at a decent job, be treated with some respect, and come home and have some time with your family and earn a living wage that you and your spouse and maybe two kids can make it work. And doing that, you're going to leave a little something to the kids and maybe be able to afford college for one or both of them. Right? Like, that's pretty much it. Like, when retire.
Just the American dream. That's all.
Right. And we say we're the best country on the planet. Great. Prove it. Why can't we do that for everybody? Right? Like, if those are the best. So I started there with them. Tell me what's important to you. So we listed off a whole bunch of the sort of talking point buzzword things. And I said, forget all that. Tell me what's really important to you. Because I was so inspired by Erica yesterday. Right? It was such common sense. And eventually we basically got down to those things. And I said, what makes you think that those things that you want, that someone else doesn't want those things? Isn't the presumption that we all basically want that?
Yes.
He said, yeah. And I said, what's the thing? What's the one thing that makes all the rest of that work? So if you don't have this element of that recipe that we just laid out, you can't get basically to any of the rest of it. And he thought about that for a while. He's like, that's a really good question. I think I know what the answer is. So what do you think, Evan, is the, like, without the one thing that we described in that whole list of things, you can't get any of the rest of them?
What do you mean you can't get the rest of them?
So let me just explain. Yeah. I didn't want to ask you a gotcha question. Here's what I mean by that.
Yes.
So we talked about you want to be fairly represented in government. You want to be sure government works pretty well. You want to be able to have a wife or husband, partner, whomever, a person, cat, dog, whatever, and have your family and go to work and earn a fair wage for your 40 hours of full-time labor. And on that fair wage, be able to support yourself and your kids. And that by doing so, you're going to live in a reasonably safe place. You're going to have some recreation time. You're going to be able to retire, right? Your kids are going to be able to go to a good school, get educated, have choices.
We're all going to make the ideal. Yes.
Yeah, right. And you might be able to pay for college for one or both of them, right? Like, okay. My argument is that there's one thing in that long list of things that I said that if you don't have that, you can't get any of the other things.
Well, just that more than just work, right? True gainful employment, the sort of thing that you can rest your laurels on and look 20 years into the future.
That's the answer,
yes.
Right? We can't meaningfully participate in government so to ensure that it is effective and efficient and responsive to us. If we are so stretched thin, right, that we don't have any time to like actually consume information or news or propaganda or whatever you want to call it and consider it and think about it and come to a judgment. We can't retire. We can't enjoy recreation time. We can't help our kids with college. We can't buy a house and live in a safe neighborhood if you basically don't have a living wage, right? If 40 hours of good hard work does not result in a take-home pay, and I don't care what you're doing, waitressing, digging a ditch, talking into a microphone, producing a radio show, being president of the United States, yes, an elected official, right? Like, whatever it is, like, yes, some people are going to make more than other people because the skill sets are more complicated, whatever it is. But even the most unskilled job, if you go work 40 hours in a week cleaning toilets, don't you think you should be able to live off that?
If it's worth paying for, absolutely. Yes, that's right. The entire point.
So if we don't have that down, like the rest of it is very hard to get to. And so that we spent some time talking about that. And then I asked him this one and I said, how do you think we get there? Because I said, you would agree we don't have a living wage in this country, that there are many, many, many millions of people that do work 40 hours and many that work many, many more than 40 hours and still don't have enough to meet their basic needs. Not retire. That's not a basic need. I mean, just enough to not be in the red every month after paying for housing, medical, food, car, insurance.
And we officially have a generation. This is the norm. We have a generation of people. I include myself.
Hand to mouth, right?
You know, that have, they've quit. They've quietly quit, right? They're sort of resigned. We are sort of resigned to this thing that you'll never own a house.
Gig work, right? This is the gig economy. Why are people doing that? Because their normal job doesn't get them into the black. They're still behind. You can't pay all your bills.
You can't go to the doctor. Can't go to the dentist. Yeah.
You ration your insulin, right? Like, so my suggestion to him was, why isn't it simply a mathematical equation? He said, whatever do you mean? And I said, just do the math. In a given region, we know how much stuff costs. There are good objective economists that do this thing that aren't rigged up to some partisan think tank. You hire them and you say, how much does it cost for a family of four in Milwaukee? And they can do this by quartiles and things, right?
Oh, amazing. It's amazing. Yes.
Yeah. Like they know this stuff and it's going to amount to a certain amount of money. And you say, divide that by 50 weeks because you get 2 weeks of vacation and then divide that number by 40 hours. And that, my friend, is your minimum wage. Right? Like, just do the math.
It does seem kind of simple. Just do the math.
Doesn't it?
Yes.
And I kid you not, my friend. This guy looked at me like I had just handed him like the Quan. He's like, I have never thought about it that way.
It feels so awfully good to be right. It's really hard to get people there.
We'll talk about some of the complexities when we come back and maybe how we might do this. But like, it's there. It's not hard to get to. I'm Maggie Dawn. This is The Maggie Dawn Show. Keep it locked. Oh,
92.7 WMDX.
Just tell her. See, I've been watching you for a while. Your smile and style. I don't know if I can be with you for the night. All right.
It's Maggie Dawn. This is the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Network. Call or text us 844-967-2789. Evan and I are trying to remember to look at the text stream. So if you do text us, we'll just call it out. It's the easiest way to get your thought on the air ASAP. But of course, you can dial us the old-fashioned way as well. 844-967-2789. So we were just recapping this conversation that I had with a new friend of mine last night. And basically had proposed to him, we can set a minimum wage. And if we set a minimum wage that actually allows people to live a decent life, they will, and here's the extrapolation, right? They will spend more money. And because they're buying more stuff, that starts to pump up an economy, right? And I had proposed to him that establishing a minimum wage isn't some super Byzantine, hard to get your head around proposition. We have economists. You can figure out what it costs.
Well, then, Maggie, we have a serious problem then, because
yes,
we're not moving in that direction at all. And you know Pizza Box. You know of whom I refer.
Of whom you speak, yes. Right.
We were kicking it in the parking lot before his show one night, and we really got into it talking about this. And the concentration of wealth, it's, you know, we're funneling down into the top, you know, 0.01% have more money than, you know, half of the planet. It's really, that's not the exact statistic, but
and the rate of dispersion, in other words, how quickly we're moving, yes, to greater levels of inequality where there's more steps between, right?
Yeah, and we're talking private
is accelerating.
For the billionaires, have their own private armies, security teams, all this. Like, there's going to be this sort of separation, like oil and water. And as time goes on, they're harming themselves, right? In order for them to accumulate this wealth, we the peons need to be buying stuff. We have to be out
and
there
and working.
Participating.
You actually need labor. Like, at, there are certain things that you need raw labor for.
Automation is the doom of the billionaire. I mean,
right?
It's interesting to think about how there's this apex point. We're getting ready to cross it, and
ask Malcolm Gladwell: are we at a tipping point? It sure is. Right. Sure as heck feels like it, right? So I explained to him the basic math of how you figure out a minimum wage. And he was sort of sitting there with that. And he's like, but what about in places, you know, like Menlo Park in San Francisco, where a 2-bedroom, 1.5-bath house costs like $2.5 million. I said, what's the problem? Do the math. And he said, how would that work? And I just said, if the economy is so booming in those places that it actually is propping up a housing price at those prices at that high a level, then yeah, there's money enough in the economy to have a living minimum wage. What you're talking about is who gets it. And he goes, isn't this wealth redistribution? I was like, tell me what is not wealth redistributive. Everything is. Everything that we do as a society and an economy is always determining who gets the biggest pile of stuff and why.
And
that's why I ask. That's why the first question is always, tell me about what's important to you. Tell me what you think your life should be. Tell me what the expectation is. What are the values, right? Because we can work backward from there. But everybody's got us. The argument's happening in the inverse right now. You know, if you asked your average, how is government working for you? Like, everybody would be mad. Why do we keep asking the same questions in the same ways and expecting that the outcomes are going to be different? And listen, my criticism, and when I make broad statements like this, it's most acute towards the right, but I mean many of these things equally towards the left. I find their level of infraction to be less egregious than the right, but it's egregious nonetheless because it keeps feeding the machine, right? Are we well served by just having a two-party system? No, it's not. It's just so easy to vilify the other side because it works for the short term to get you elected. And it incentivizes not having conversations with the general public about the stuff that really matters.
As intended, working as intended.
Right? It is humming along with perfection, my friends. Everyone is talking about wokeism and CRT and drag shows. That stuff is important, but it is nowhere near important. No one gets to do the things that we all want to do if we don't have a basic understanding of the building blocks, that a fair wage should be paid for fair labor.
We have a growing population of people that have been deemed undeserving of the benefits of polite society. I mean, that's...
Well, and it's beyond undeserving, right? There's this pernicious, sticky idea that folks aren't working, right? So I think we have to not argue with people about whether or not there are people that are working and just say, what's the expectation for you? How is this working for you? And then talk about the ways that it's not working. Explain that. And by the way, it's not working for anybody else either, right? That's the thing that actually brings us together. And no, it's not helpful if I call someone a racist. It's not. I get that, right?
Sure.
Hate speech bothers me. But ultimately, and I want to be accountable to you, the people that are listening, to get better at doing this.
Stick around. Tell us why you're upset, please.
Right, exactly. So get better at doing it, not vilifying one another, but saying, okay, like what are the basic principles? And is the policy that we're arguing about, one, relevant to how we're cutting up the stuff, the gold amongst one another? Does it make sense on like our just most human sense of fairness level? Because if it isn't, okay, let's actually start focusing our attention on how to change that stuff. So, of course, I have to plug before we go off. If this is at all interesting to you, if you want to see why you feel like you're getting screwed and maybe have a deeper understanding of the framework here, and you live in Richland Center, Then the Justice Center next Wednesday, July 12th, from 5:30 to 7:30. Be there or be square. You get $50 and a belly full of free dinner.
We'll have to explain that one more time when we get back.
Absolutely. I'm Maggie Dawn. This is the Maggie Dawn Show. Keep it locked here on the Civic Media Network. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn, and you are listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Network. Do not forget to download the app. You can hear us crystal clear and join the conversation with one click. If you'd like to join us the old-fashioned way, 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. We've been talking about just doing the math to arrive at a regionally adjusted minimum wage. And it, you know, would this be shocking? Yeah, it would. But guess what businesses and governments are really good at? Moving real fast when we need to. I think about often, like, how drastically our lives have changed in a really, really short period of time. And I'm not just talking about because of COVID, but that plus all the technology. I mean, I used to watch the Jetsons, right? We're like half in the Jetsons, basically. Pretty cool, you know?
Yeah, it's cool. It's cool. I'm with you.
It's also very scary, right?
Yep.
And the thing that's really scary to me is that we can't seem to pay attention to the right stuff. So if you want to have a conversation about the right stuff, no matter where you are on the political spectrum, this is a place for you. The entire network. I mean, producers don't even really screen. You guys say, hi, you know, what do you want to talk about? And callers get put through. I want to hear from people that disagree. And that conversation is also needs to happen in person and in the community, right? Like right where you are.
And I don't judge, you know, like I'm not asking you what your thoughts are. You're going to come on the air. You know, you're unbridled. I'm not telling you what you can and can't say. I'm ready to cut you right off. You know, if I have to.
Yeah, you have to bear the consequences.
Yeah, but no, it's true.
And I think the fact that the Great Economy Project is coming to Richland Center next week to try to have this discussion with people like right in the community. So if you want to talk about the economy and whether or not it's working for you, no matter what your point of view is, you can come to the Phoenix Center next Wednesday, July 12th in Richland Center. You'll get $50 for your time from 5:30 to 7:30, and there will be dinner. Come check it out. It's called the Great Economy Project.
$50 for real. For real, too.
I know.
That's wild.
For just, like, hanging out. Like, yeah. Hey, let's learn some things.
There's a statement behind it, though. I mean, it's a really cool idea.
It is, and I think it's important that one of the things that I struggle with all of the time in government, and in fact spent the vast majority of my day today thinking about and working on, was there are all of these people with all of this technical expertise, and so many of us are so terrible at explaining that to anybody. And it's like the information and the knowledge is there, but I don't think it's fair to try to ask technical experts to become communications experts and figure out how to filter it into digestible bits, right? And there's so much that gets lost there in that translation. If we don't try to talk to our audience right where the audience is at, it doesn't work. It's certainly something that I try every day in my job to not be in a fog of legalese. It's why I love doing the radio, right? Because I get to try to explain things and have discussions in a way that everybody can get a foothold in. And I think that's important.
In a way,
right?
That doesn't exist anymore. I mean, I work for Civic Media, so I might have a slight bias, but this is a special company. It's worth interfacing with.
Yeah, and I think The more we can have conversations with people that we really, really, really disagree with and might even find like really dislikable, that just builds that muscle. And hopefully this is one of those places that we can do that and do it without name calling. So I will always be accountable to you, dear listener. If you think I'm engaging in name calling, you let me know. You can always email me, maggie.dawn@civicmedia.us. You can call me and light me up on the air. I love it when I get taken to the woodshed.
What's wrong with a little ad hominem every now and again, you know?
Yeah, you know, it's the spice of life. We've got Jim from Appleton online too. Welcome to the Maggie Dawn Show. What do you have to say?
I'm been pushing this for the last 6 months. I'm going to try again. First Amendment, Brandenburg versus Ohio, did not eliminate hate speech as an unprotected right. It did not eliminate incitement to riot as an unprotected right. It did not eliminate, fighting words as a protected right of speech. The Republicans have been using riots, fighting words, blatant lies. All these things are not protected. And yet, when we get to state houses like Montana, where they censure and remove an admitted transgender person for reading statistics about the suicide rate of transgender kids who keep getting put down. In Tennessee, they kicked two legislatures out of the House for trying to bring up the amount of gun violence that's going on. These guys get away with this because, oh, well, we didn't really mean it. And First Amendment, it's our right, but it's not the First Amendment rights of the people they're censuring and kicking out. I don't get it. Why aren't we going after these people?
Yeah, I think, thanks for the call, Jim. Please keep listening. Appreciate your call. Jim raises a really good point. It seems to me, and I couldn't agree more, that the First Amendment is being used as carrot stick, as sword, and as shield, and it has become a principle of convenience to the right. I would like to count myself amongst a rabid crew of First Amendment defenders. Some really scary things have happened in our country's history when people have said things highly critical of the government, particularly in response to war, as well as economic injustice. I'm specifically referring to effectively the labor and peace movements that sort of started coming out of World War I and were nearly quashed in their entirety.
Oh, swiftly crushed, yes.
Right? By acts of Congress that made speech illegal. Like, you couldn't criticize the U.S. openly. And people were imprisoned for these things. And to me, like, yeah, this is in modern history. This is not a far long time ago. And I think Jim's exactly right. Like, whose speech is it that we're protecting? It seems to be quite a bit selective. That's why you see some of these federal courts striking down the drag show bans. And then yet in the same breath, we see the primacy of the First Amendment asserted in the 303 Creative case to the detriment of basic civil liberty and equal access rights of a historically suppressed and oppressed group of Americans. Like, this is problematic. And so to me, it always rings extraordinarily hollow when people say, but and say one, assert one right, one value, one thing. Because the reality is, of course, that these things don't exist in isolation. We're not trying to pursue one right. There's a balance of rights, and sometimes your rights bump into my rights.
An entire Bill of Rights.
That's right. There's a whole list of them. And that's where the debate is. But it's taken on this tenor of good and evil, deserve and earn and don't, and freeloader. Like, it's just so off point. But to return to Jim's initial statement, yeah, it sure seems like the rules are being interpreted and the First Amendment used very differently on the right and the left.
I've always sort of thought of it, you can say whatever you want, right? You can say anything, anything, you know, really, you can use your imagination and say some truly despicable things, but that doesn't mean there isn't a consequence attached to it.
Correct.
You know?
And one of those consequences, so, you know, Jim's question cues up this fascinating decision that came out weirdly on July 4th from the federal courts, where a Trump-appointed judge in a 100-page-plus decision forbade the Biden administration from basically talking to any social media companies about misinformation. And I thought, whoa, this is weird. This is weird. Now, can the government decide to forbid misinformation speech? In large part, no. But this, the government talking to private sector actors who can restrict whatever speech they want on their premises. And their premises here are the interwebs and these social media platforms. And to me, it was like, this is weird. And the fact that this judge issued the decision on July 4th, also bizarre. Like, what kind of judgment is this guy actually exercising? Why are you doing that? Well, it's symbolic. Well, why are you being symbolic if you're a judge? Well, it kind of is an F you to the people who disagree. Well, why are you doing it? That's at sending a message. No, your message is your opinion, you dolt. It doesn't make any sense to me. A deep, egregious breach of protocol.
It's a corruption. And yeah.
It is. And listen, I could spend days talking to you about the fairness doctrine, which used to apply and would effectively require media companies to evenly present both sides of an argument. Can you imagine that? It's why newspapers used to have op-eds that ran the pro and the con right next to each other with an equal amount of inches.
Our job, your and I, and my job could be really, really interesting if this was still
very different.
Yes.
And that doctrine, it went away. Nope, First Amendment. What we have now is the equal time rule, which basically means that for political candidates, you have to give them the same access to buy time, effectively, read advertising, whatnot. But this idea that you say the First Amendment and anything goes, no. And yet here is this judge that's now trying to say, the government can't talk to the private sector social media companies about things that are objectively harming our democracy. Okay? Falsehoods about COVID, falsehoods about the election. And what I mean to suggest here is not that I know what the answer is, because clearly if you had a government, you know, led by someone with a clear personal agenda who didn't care about anything about national security, you know, maybe would leave classified documents laying around in a bathroom, like someone like that, that really wanted to, you know, militarize and pressure private companies to make that person more powerful and wealthy. I can't imagine anyone doing that. Yeah, that could lead down a terrible slippery slope, right? Because the government wields so much immense power. The flip side of this is we're no longer talking about standing on a literal soapbox in Hyde Park in London and screaming your opinions. These platforms aren't just the public square. They're the public square to the infinite power, because what you see is being curated, and it's being curated by an infinite set of data that allows them to target exactly your own psychological vulnerabilities.
Data and it's AI, as if, that's like taught by someone, though. That's the really scary part.
Yes, someone is deciding it'll build the algorithms and how the thing learns about you. It is a literal mind screw. It is designed to make you buy and do things and think things. You aren't selecting anything, but you can always select this show and control what you hear, whether you agree or disagree, because this is the Maggie Dawn Show. All opinions are welcome. 844-967-2789. We're going to go to the phones after this break here on the Civic Media Network. Join us, Mark, from the SAC. You will be up first. 844-967-2789. We'll be right back.
starting lineup. Beginning at 6, Up North News. Then at 8, The Stephanie Miller Show.
On Mad Radio, 92.7 WMDX.
Welcome back, everybody. It is the last segment of the Hour of the Maggie Dawn Show here on Thursday. What is it, July? I don't even know what date it is. That's how fuzzed my brain is.
The 6th of July.
The 6th of July. You can join the conversation, 844-967-2789. Just a reminder, I'll be back on Monday because I have Fridays off. The brain eventually actually has to shut down.
I get excited for Friday's show, and there is no show, don't get me wrong, you know. I had to answer a couple calls this last Friday. You know,
your
show's replaying. People are listening, paying attention, wanting to
cool.
Interact. And it's like, sorry, bud.
She's not actually here. It is but a mirage. So I will be back on Tuesday. Much more to talk about then. We were just taking a pause on this July 4th ruling that basically is an injunction keeping the Biden administration and the FCC, et cetera, as well as, I forget what it's called. It's the Cyber and Information Security Agency, CISA, from talking to these private social media companies under the guise of the First Amendment. The interesting thing is, so there were a bunch of factual errors in this judge's decision, which I always think is a little bit of a wah, wah. And he also wrote this in the decision. When you couple this with the sort of attention-seeking behavior the judge demonstrated by issuing this decision on July 4th, it starts to take on a tinge of predetermined outcome. Here's what he wrote. Quote, the present case arguably involves the most massive attack against free speech in U.S. history, end quote. You nope. Like, not even close. This isn't a matter of opinion. No one who studied in this area would say, like, that's the most disturbing thing. What everyone who's an expert in this area is saying, gosh, how are we going to figure out what to do about social media platforms and the algorithms and the scraping of data from everyone? Like, should people actually own their own data bits?
Should the government have any access? Imagine a Trump administration that could drive Twitter. I mean, my God.
Should they be run by the government? I mean, the questions here are endless. I don't presuppose to know them because I'm not an expert in this area, but I can tell you this. Having the federal government talk to private social media companies about the way that misinformation and hate speech and lewd content and all these things is spread around the universe is not, quote, arguably the most massive attack against free speech in U.S. history. No.
Insane.
No. Not. Try again. Mark from the SAC, I promised you, go at it. The floor is yours, my friend.
Yeah, what I find remarkable is that Josh Hawley, with his recent rant about the country being founded on biblical principles, which is easy enough for a high school student, could tear it apart. I mean, that, you know, I could, you know, that this bothers me that these guys can come up with this stuff. And fortunately, there's people calling them out on it. But I mean, when you first were talking about, you talked about for free speech, well, what about the Alien and Sedition Act? In the early days of the Republic, when John Adams was jailing members of the press for things that were critical of him, I can't remember at the top of my head, you know, the World War One infringement on free speech off the top
that
of my head.
That was the specific act that I was thinking about, Mark, because it was so broad. Like, you couldn't say anything negative about the U.S. government.
And I can remember, I can't remember what it was called at this point in time, what the name of that particular law was, but that it is something that, but when a media outlet is allowing things to be posted that are directly could kill people, are you saying that the government does not have a role to play?
A regulatory role? Right? Like, I couldn't agree with you more, Mark. Thanks for the call. I mean, Congress has failed to act, okay? This is the problem that we're at right now, because we do not have the correct information. We aren't reading it, right? And those media companies are being used by political parties, but more specifically, political parties are just a reflection of who's pulling the strings, who's paying for that stuff, right? And they're manipulating what we're seeing and reading and understanding, and that is keeping us distracted, totally off the point. And now we've got this dip. U.S. District Judge Terry Doty, I doubt he that Doty has gotten this right, that says, like, you can't even talk to the companies? The present case arguably involves the most massive attack on against free speech in U.S. history. No!
And these systems exist. Twitter has this really, really... It might be a little convoluted, but it's sophisticated. It's like a separation of powers almost, in that they're able to interact with governmental agencies and not hand over the keys.
And it's always been that way. We've done these things for security matters from time to time. Is that very problematic from a civil rights perspective? Yes, you bet. Again, my point here is that it's never one value. It's two values. It's, hey, this thing is harming people. It is arguably harming our democracy. Should we be able to regulate it? Yes. How? I don't know. But this idea that we're stuck not doing anything about it is ludicrous. What's lurking behind that decision is like, we're not going to be able to do anything here. That's garbage. It's that sort of absolutism that has led us to this insane place in American society about the Second Amendment. We can't have basic common sense gun regulation because we have a right to bear arms? No, all of our rights have limits, dummy.
With a minute left in the show, that's an entirely different box of spiders.
Right! Of course our rights have limits. And of course the government needs to think about how to smartly regulate these things, and we have to evolve those regulations. And the internet and social media with algorithms that are curated to manipulate the way that you think so that someone makes a profit or destabilizes an election system or a democracy because it suits their geopolitical aims. Vladimir Putin, I'm looking at you, man.
If a service or product is free, like, you are the product. You are what's
being sold. Yes, always. They are scraping your data. We can't live without this stuff anymore. Should we start regulating it? I think so. Because the regulation is happening. It's just being done in the private sector without anybody knowing what's going on. We'll save more of this for next week. But yeah, suffice it to say that good old Terry Doty, yeah, didn't get it right. I'm Maggie Dawn. This has been another episode of the Maggie Dawn Show here on Civic Media. Thank you for your ears. Y'all take care. I'll see you next week.